with your support, we're going to take the entire West Coast.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everybody. Steve Grzanich has the day off today. I'm Matt Bubala filling in here for the next hour on The Opening Bell. We'll give you the news you need to get your day started and hopefully make you a buck or two along the way. Let's start right now by taking a look back at the markets from yesterday. As you just heard Vic mention in the news update, the U.S. stock indexes finished mostly mixed to flat after having a pretty good day until minutes were released from the latest meeting of the Federal Reserve. Those minutes indicated that the Fed might be ready to raise interest rates as early as June. Stocks were reaching session highs just a few minutes before the minutes were released, but then they fell dramatically to session lows quickly after that information became public. Heading into today, the futures are down for both the S&P 500 and the Dow. Tesla shares dropped a bit yesterday on news that they're issuing about $2 billion in new common stock. Tesla reports they will use the additional funds to help ramp up production of its new Model 3. Demand has far exceeded expectations with over 400,000 orders for the vehicle, which is raising questions about whether Tesla can keep up in demand. We've been checking the airline stocks this morning. I was curious to see how they're doing. We've heard so much news in the past week about the TSA lines here at O'Hare and Midway, but as well with the Egypt Air crash this morning and the uncertainty about what's happening there. Stocks were falling in the travel and tourism industry overseas. Over the past week and few months, U.S. airlines have remained mostly neutral or maybe grown a little bit despite six-month fall-offs in most of those stocks, but they're doing pretty well, especially Southwest Airlines. So it doesn't appear that they've been harmed too much by that as of right now. Joining us on the phone with a piece that he wrote in brandchannel.com is business journalist Dale Buss. And he wrote about McDonald's and Wendy's. They're looking to make some changes within their organizations. McDonald's, Dale, good morning. Welcome to the show. McDonald's has been making a lot of changes over the last couple of years, haven't they?
Well, they really had to. You know, this really proud American company, which redefined how we all eat, basically, you know, lost a lot of ground under the previous CEO, Don Thompson, and since the new CEO came in last year, Steve Easterbrook, you know, he was a McDonald's guy from the company, but he came in with sort of new energy and new ideas, and finally has been able to do some things to reverse what had been a three-year slide in same-store sales, which is something that, you know, had never occurred in McDonald's history. So, you know, as people are very familiar with at this point, one of the things that he did is he brought back or expanded breakfast, McDonald's very popular breakfast menu, to all day. And he also has been rolling out pretty vigorously various experiments around the world, actually, with a customization effort called Create Your Taste, where McDonald's has self-serve kiosks in their restaurants, giving customers a chance to sort of exercise some of their own particular preferences when it comes to putting together their burgers. It also is a labor-saving move at a time when McDonald's is feeling a lot of pressure to boost wages and, you know, even protest some of its restaurants over the last couple of years. This Create Your Taste format can cut labor costs as well and really takes advantage of digital technology in a way that McDonald's hasn't done before. So they're far from out of the woods, but in terms of momentum, it's interesting that McDonald's is achieving, you know, progress now that it really hasn't over the last over the previous 3 years. So they're kind of putting the pedal to the metal with testing of some other ideas as well.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the all-day breakfast, because that was such a huge news story when it came out, because people do tend to love McDonald's breakfast, and it's frustrating if you get there at 10:30 and they won't let you order those pancakes anymore. And I know a lot of franchisees were a little bit stressed out about the idea of having to have so much stuff available all day long. Have they come along now? Are they pretty happy with it?
Well, yeah, that is one of the things that McDonald's has had to be conscious of all the while. I mean, everything that you do to expand the menu, to add a wrinkle here operationally, you know, a wrinkle there, makes that famed McDonald's system of quick ordering and quick fulfillment, you know, kind of endangers that which is very important to the brand. I mean, people may want better food. They may want more variety, but they don't want to sit in that drive-thru, you know, for any 1 second longer than they have to. So McDonald's has had to be very careful about that. Now, when it came to all-day breakfast, yes, you're right. A lot of franchisees were skeptical. But one of the things that Easterbrook did is he said, look, we're not going to make everything on the breakfast menu available all day. We're going to have certain things, and we're going to make them some of the easiest to prepare things and the most popular things. So you've got some economies of scale going on. Obviously, the Egg McMuffin, the centerpiece of the McDonald's breakfast menu, was one of those things. And so, you know, not only did they bring it back, but also McDonald's switched things up a little bit. They said, hey, let's use real butter with the Egg McMuffin again. Let's go back to our original English muffin that made this sandwich so popular. So they did all those things, and lo and behold, I think sales are up something like 28% on breakfast items.
Hold
at
on.
McDonald's, and it works.
Yeah, no kidding. Hold on for 1 second, Dale. We've got to take a quick check of traffic. We're speaking with Dale Buss about the changes McDonald's is making. Wendy's is also making some changes as well.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. It was a slightly calmer day for U.S. investors. The S&P 500 squeaked out a fractional gain. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 3 points to 17,527. The NASDAQ climbed 23 points. After failing to reach a deal with creditors and lenders, Sports Authority has announced it will sell its assets and close its 450 stores. The ailing retailer says it'll hold going out of business sales at all of its locations from May 25th through the end of August. Target says its sales fell 5.5% in the last quarter compared with the same period in 2015, largely because of the sale of its pharmacy and clinic business to CVS. Target's core merchandise categories, babies, kids, continue to outperform the rest of its business. And Google has unveiled its new Google Home, a voice-controlled speaker that it hopes will compete with Amazon's Echo. Both stream music and perform tasks like web searches, adding calendar appointments, and looking up traffic conditions and movie times. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
And Matt Bubala in for Steve Grzanich today here on 720 WGN. We're speaking with Dale Buss. You can follow him on social media at Dale D. Buss, talking about the changes McDonald's is making. Dale, we talked a little bit about the breakfast menu going all day long, but also you were mentioning these kiosks where you can kind of customize your orders. And is that just with the regular burgers? Like, I order a Big Mac, but I don't want the lettuce or I don't want the dressing? Or can you kind of create your own burgers at these kiosks? We're having technical difficulties here on 720 WGN this morning. Wendy's as well, we'll get into this with Dale in a second. Wendy's is having something that they're doing where they are introducing kiosks, but it's kind of two different things here. McDonald's is adding these kiosks supposedly for more choices, that you can make different choices with your menu items, and they're saying that they're being forced to add to the workforce by adding these kiosks. Imagine it'll be a little bit tougher to make the meals if you're making them custom order. Wendy's, meanwhile, is in a pilot program with putting kiosks out there because they want to reduce wage costs. Because of increasing costs of wages, they're playing with the idea of the kiosks in order to possibly reduce their workforce. Dale, you back with us?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry about that. Hey, so I was just mentioning with McDonald's, you talked about the kiosks to order something custom. So is that just with a Big Mac or a Quarter Pounder that you just don't want the lettuce or you want more pickles? Or is it a create your own burger type situation?
Well, it's a little bit of both. And with an organization, you know, as vast as McDonald's and all the operational considerations you have to have, but, you know, the chain has to be really careful about how much it allows people to go crazy. But, you know, the whole idea of create your taste is to give McDonald's the kind of, let's say, quote unquote, new product that it used to pretty much regularly come up with and, you know, kind of sensationalize marketing and give people something exciting to go to the restaurant for. And that's a quality that McDonald's really had been missing over the last several years. It just could never come up with that big new product to bring people into its stores the way it used to. You know, it tried chicken wings, for example, Mighty Wings, they called them. And, you know, that just didn't go over very well. So that lack of a big new product to bring people in was something that really hurt McDonald's and was a big reason for its slide. And with Create Your Taste, if McDonald's has a chance to say, hey, you know, we're doing something here big and new. Also, one of the things it's testing right now at some restaurants in Dallas is fresh beef. That would be a huge change for McDonald's, which has always relied on this system of frozen beef patties. And now, lo and behold, they're trying out an idea which, again, would allow them to trumpet, you know, something big and new at McDonald's, some, you know, create some new product news to bring people in the doors. And, of course, that also would make McDonald's, if they went this way system-wide, the biggest chain to be using fresh beef patties, which has always been a calling card of Wendy's.
Yeah, and that's got to increase expenses quite a bit, though. If they really try to roll out heavily fresh patties at a McDonald's, that's got to increase cost, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Everything that Easterbrook is doing at McDonald's has to be balanced. Everything to bring people in the door also brings more costs in the door. And that's, you know, something that continually McDonald's is having to balance. But, you know, there is a chance here for McDonald's to really consolidate the gains it's been making. And, you know, if you look at the fact that one of the biggest thorns in its side, let's say, Chipotle, is vulnerable these days, you know, because of this food safety problem that Chipotle has had over the last year or so. You know, there are chances here for McDonald's to come back in an even bigger way than it has now. So Easterbrook has to balance all these considerations. What brings people in the door? What costs my franchisees money? What costs higher wages in terms of having to have more employees to handle things?
Well,
you know, but so far, you've got to commend the job he's doing.
Things certainly seem to be working. McDonald's trading just off its 52-week high, so it's made a nice comeback over the last year. With the kiosks, you write in your story on brandchannel.com that U.S. franchisees at McDonald's are having to add some employees right now. At Wendy's, it's a different story, though. I just have 30 seconds left, but Wendy's is adding kiosks and explicitly stating this is in response to increasing wages, correct?
Right, exactly. I mean, they're not doing the customization aspect of kiosks at Wendy's, but they are going to the digital technology that's behind the McDonald's thing as well. And, you know, with pressure on wages at fast food restaurants all over, including Wendy's, they all have to come up with ways that they can streamline operationally. So that's what Wendy's is testing.
Dale Buss is a business journalist. He's got a story at brandchannel.com. You can follow him on social media at Dale D. Buss. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone this morning.
You bet.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Matt Bubala with you here on The Opening Bell this morning. Vic, by the way, so you're following the Egypt Air situation. I just want to talk about that for a second because it's crazy. Whenever these things happen, there's so much unknown, and things have gone back and forth, I think, just in the last couple of hours on what we've heard. What's the latest on what we know about what happened and where they're at?
The latest on what we know for sure, what's confirmed, is that Flight 804 disappeared sometime around 2:45 a.m. Local time in France. It was on its way from Charles de Gaulle Airport to Cairo. It disappeared from radar. The search team includes Egyptian Navy vessels. Greece has now joined the search with two aircraft and a frigate. France is offering its assistance, however, doesn't have any equipment in the area at this point. No debris field has been found yet, but Egyptian aviation officials say they do believe the aircraft has crashed. However, they say they have no evidence of that yet. They say that's the most likely scenario. 66 people were on board. And there is a search. The search field, as far as has been reported, is about 175 miles off the coast of Egypt. We are hoping to learn more. There's also been reports, as you indicated, Egypt officials have said that there is some sort of signal that they're following. And now this signal... They've confirmed that the pilot did not make a distress call before it disappeared from radar. However, there is a signal that started about 2 hours after it disappeared. So, you know, it's speculation at this point, but it could be anything from a life raft that broke loose from the bottom of the ocean and came to the surface and has now turned on its beacon. There's just no telling. But the Mediterranean Sea in this search area is not very deep, so chances of finding something are good if it did, in fact, crash. And there's also a chance that there could even be survivors if the pilot was able to make a ditch landing in the ocean because the temperatures are supportive of life. So that is what we know at this point.
Early reports had the pilot making a distress call. There were various reports. That's not confirmed as of right now?
Yeah, early reports, this coming out of Egyptian aviation officials, were that there was a distress call made. However, they've since said that the pilot made no distress call. Also the Egyptian military is confirming that they received no distress call. And even if, just again speculating, even if something happened in the cockpit and the pilot was forced to turn off his beacon, military technology and officials would be able to pick up a distress call if the pilot if the aircraft sent one out. But the Egyptian military saying they received no distress call. Now again, there's a signal, but that could be from some sort of life-sustaining device on the aircraft that has surfaced.
And the other question I have, I guess, is, so other earlier reports had a freighter in the sea reporting seeing a fire in the sky. That is backed off, too?
Officials in Greece are investigating reports that there was a fireball seen in the sky. Again, there's no confirmation on that. That's being investigated, though, as in many cases of these types of situations, people see things in the sky. And maybe it's credible, but it hasn't been confirmed by anyone at Egypt Air or Egyptian officials. That's strictly coming out of Greece, and they are looking into reports that there was a fireball seen in the sky.
All right. I really appreciate all the information. I know it's tough to keep going on that because you've got 8,000 things flying at you at once, but we want to make sure that all of our listeners have the latest information. Vic, break back in at any time if you have something new, okay?
You bet, Matt.
Thank you very much. Matt Bubala here with you on the opening bell on Radio 720 WGN. Alistair Dreiber is a contributor at Forbes, and he has an interesting story out about whether or not your business plan should fit on the back of an envelope and analysis paralysis. Alistair, good morning. Thank you very much for joining the show.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Absolutely. Thank you for being with us. Tell me a little bit. We only have a couple of minutes here, but tell me a little bit about a business plan. And you argue that maybe if it's longer than the back of an envelope, maybe that is too much. Maybe we ask for too much information. Does it come down to at the root of it all, Alistair, if we want to start a business, we have to look at it in the most basic terms and say, is this a good idea?
I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. I mean, this came out of a conversation I had with someone I was advising, and she said, "Oh, I don't really feel comfortable doing a business case on the back of an envelope when the situation is so uncertain." And I said to her, "Well, actually, I think that's exactly why you need to be using the back of an envelope, because you're making a confusion here. It's not complicated, it's uncertain. You know, if something is complicated, like you've put some new software on your computer and it's doing weird things, you could, if you had enough knowledge and enough time and experience, get to the bottom of it and work out what was going on. But a lot of the time, when we're dealing with business, we don't know. It's not like that. It's just uncertain. It's like, what's the weather going to be like on Christmas Day next year? Or what's a roulette ball going to do in a wheel when it's spun? We just simply have no way of knowing. And if that makes you uncomfortable, then if you just try to get more and more information, then you're thinking, oh, we've got all this extra information, still we don't really know. So you're even less comfortable, and it's a vicious circle. And before you know it, you're in total analysis.
Yeah.
Paralysis.
Well, but certainty is a bit of a false thing, too, isn't it? Because uncertainty goes along with any business that you're starting or looking into. You have to be comfortable, I would imagine, with a certain amount of uncertainty, correct?
You do. And I think there's two things there. Firstly, I think the level of uncertainty you need to be comfortable with now is more than it was perhaps 20 years ago, just because the speed at which things move and the number of new things that come along. And also, it's one thing to say, yes, we need to be comfortable with uncertainty, but then there's the more difficult step is actually to to behave like that. So there's lots of people who say, yeah, yeah, we know this is uncertain. But then when you look at what they're actually doing, they're behaving as if they thought there wasn't much uncertainty there. So it's one thing to recognize it, which probably, you know, most people can do up to a point. But then to say, OK, what does this mean about the way we do things? And we start doing things in a very different way. That, I think, is the hard step, actually, you know, acting on it rather than just saying it.
Real quick, do you think most people when starting a business or looking to invest in a business overanalyze things? Do they fall into that realm, or do most people not do enough research, not do enough analysis to figure out whether or not it's something they should be doing?
I think it depends where you've come from. If you're in the corporate world or you've come from the corporate world, then your bias is to try to do too much. People who haven't had that sort of background, they may get it right, or sometimes they may do too little, and that's also a point. But I think more, you know, if you're going to make a mistake, much more likely that you're going to do too much than you're going to do too little.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Matt Bubala in for Steve Grzanich this morning. In just a moment, Scott Catoon will join us to chat about Hewlett-Packard and the $100 million bet they're making on startups. You might not think of HP in that way, but everybody needs to reinvent themselves these days. We'll do that after we check the markets here with Orion.
Good morning. Lean hog futures fell sharply yesterday, led by declines in the front month June contract on both technical and fund selling. The June contract settled down $1.52, a hundredweight at a one-week low of $81.22. While hog futures were going down, cash hog prices stayed firm, steady to firm, and as much as a half dollar higher. Yesterday, June live cattle futures ended the day down 20 cents at $123.12 a hundredweight. And in the grain market yesterday, corn futures extended their winning streak, but soy and wheat moved lower for the day. Corn futures firmed to their highest level in nearly 4 weeks yesterday. Soybean futures, thanks to a round of profit-taking, traded lower but closed well above session lows. And wheat futures, again, weakened, pressured by a firm U.S. dollar and global competition. U.S. grains handler Andersons rejected a $1 billion bid this week. The Andersons company is a U.S. grain handler, and a $1 billion in cash takeover offer from HC2 Holdings, they said, was too low. And so they said no to that attempt. And then the EPA finally increased its renewable fuels targets modestly for 2017, finally got the numbers, and I find very few people are happy with it. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
And it's Matt Bubala here for Steve Grzanich on the opening bell for about 10 more minutes. Then the Steve Cochran Show takes over your morning drive. Scott Catoon joins us on the phone right now to talk a little bit about Hewlett-Packard. Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Hey, Matt. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Hewlett-Packard, I just haven't thought much about in the last 10 years. You know, the computing industry has changed so much, and these companies need to change the way they do business. We used to think of HP as desktops and things in the computer area. We probably are focused a lot more in different areas now. I imagine the cloud and big data and things like that. And there's a story out about Meg Whitman touring facilities because Hewlett-Packard is investing up to $100 million on startups. Why would they start approaching that instead of just outright buying companies that they can bring into their fold?
Yeah, so, well, they started this last year. It's their venture wing. The short answer to why they do this is, the reality is there's a company called Voodoo that they took over a few years ago. It was a really great company. They paid a ton of money for it, but they just didn't, you know, it just didn't work out, and then that becomes a, you know, $500 million or $1 billion loss, which they have to underwrite. If you go this route, you can say $500,000, $1 million, $2 million, $5 million, $10 million, whatever the, you know, amount of money that they invest into a company, and own a share of something at a much smaller price. So if it works out, great. If it doesn't work out, it's not a $1 billion loss on the books.
Yeah, there's the story is that the write downs early in Meg Whitman's tenure, they had about $15 billion in write downs on companies that they took over that things just didn't work out. So when they're looking at startups, are they looking only at companies that correspond to what HP is focused on, or will they look at anything that looks like it could make money down the road?
You know, I'm sure that they will have their own focus, right? I mean, every investor or venture arm of anything has kind of a shot list of what they're looking for. But an example that I was just talking to somebody yesterday about this, an example of some stuff that just sort of pops up, like McDonald's involvement with Redbox early on. It doesn't make any sense for McDonald's at the time, but it just seemed like a great idea to invest in, and they went for it. Obviously, that paid off for McDonald's. I think that they probably will be doing a lot of SaaS and B2B software platforms will be a focal point. But I have no doubt that if they are floating around at some incubator and they see some ideas that they think are the future of anything, particularly stuff in the Internet of Things, I suspect that they'll be interested in making an investment. The other thing to note about this that's interesting is one of the things that they're working on is looking at like $5 and $10 million investments, which would suggest that the series that they're investing in is later series to sort of pump life into a company that's already – you know, a startup that's already starting to pick up steam, which is, I think, interesting because one of the problems, one of the concerns that startup companies have and sort of this community in general has with the involvement of large corporations is they are stodgy and they're slow moving and they bring a lot of difficult business stuff that is not flexible, which doesn't really jive well with the startup community, right? So the main thing to think about here is that they're not going to be getting involved in the early stage where the corporate slowness is going to slow down the growth of the rapid growth of a startup company. They're getting involved, you know, at a later stage when that company has employees and when it's already ideally post-revenue. And so I think, you know, I think it's a good thing for the community that we need more companies like this to start getting involved perhaps even earlier than the $10 million rounds, because you can't have private equity guys spending all of the money to invest in these companies. Otherwise, you're going to run out of funds, and that's where the scary bubble talk comes in.
Is there a danger for a company like AP, though, to invest in companies instead of outright buying them? For example, they might invest in a company, but that company could still be scooped up by a competitor then, correct?
Yeah, I guess you look at it this way. So if you figure let's say startup companies in your own, you know, your own wheelhouse, and they start capturing a little bit of market share away from you, and you've invested in them, whether they get scooped up or not, you end up getting, you end up making a lot of money on your investment. So either way, it pretty much worked out. The other thing to think about is, like I said, when they're getting involved in such a late round, they're probably owning 10, 20, 15, you know, percent of the company. And there probably are structures for IP law. And there's probably all kinds of clauses in there for, you know, having the first right of refusal or being able to purchase first. You know, there's a million little things that can be put into an investment or a contract that enable them to protect themselves from just getting kind of whipped off or scooped out by a competitor. But you're right. At the end of the day, you know, just investing in them and buying them versus buying them outright, of course, has inherent risk.
Scott Catoon, thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too. You can follow Scott on social media at Catoon at KITUN. That's pretty much it for the opening bell this morning. Thanks to Bennett Wakenight, Mary Sandberg, and Ben Cortez.